Welcome back to the last session. We're going to do a 2-minute meditation and then I'm going to lead us in a prayer. My Lord God, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope that I have that desire in all that I am doing. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road. Although I may know nothing about it. Therefore will I trust you. Though I may seem to be lost. And in the shadow of death. I will not fear. For you are ever with me. And you will never leave me. To face my perils alone. Amen.
This one's called clarity. Can you see a sound? Can you hear a light? Can you unite your senses? Can you turn inward? What we are all seeking is clarity. Forget about religious rationalizations. Forget about elaborate explanations. What we all want is clarity. What we abhor is ignorance. Ignorance confuses us, brings us misfortune and sorrow, and it makes us miserable. If we have clarity, then we can live in equanimity. It is a misconception that spirituality brings everlasting happiness. There is no such thing. Sadness still comes to the wise, but unlike most people, their clarity of mind allows them to see beyond the temporal emotionalism of the moment. They are far-seeing, and so happiness and sorrow become the same to them. True clarity is more than just being smart, more than just being wise. Clarity manifests from meditation. It comes when you can unite all of the faculties of the mind and unify them into a magnificent light of perception. It is hard to talk of this in anything but mystical terms. Our language is unfamiliar with the frontiers of the spirit. because few have ever seen those limits, let alone describe them. But let's try. If you unite sound with vision, then you will create light. That light is the concentrated force of the mind. It is by that brightness that truth is revealed.
All right, last session. I want to acknowledge some of the people who made this weekend happen. John, we want to thank you for your participation. Harry, thank you so much. Jackie, who's not here, and Mr. Scott, stand up there in the back, please, sir. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes to make one of these weekends go off, and we just are so grateful for your service work. I'm going to read out of the foreword to the second edition. The physician had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. But when the broker, Bill, gave Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism and its hopelessness, the physician, Dr. Bob, began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he had never before been able to muster. He sobered and never to drink again up to the moment of his death in 1950. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic can affect another as no non-alcoholic can. This seems to prove that one addict can affect another as no non-addict can. It also indicates that strenuous, which implies hard work, one addict with another, one alcoholic with another, is vital, necessary for life, vital to permanent, not one day at a time, permanent recovery. So what Brandon and I have spent this weekend doing up here is describing the prep work. For years I was confused. I thought my working of the 12 steps was the work. And I'd always want to be in the work. Because I thought that had such a tremendous amount to do with my spiritual evolution. And then this idea was introduced to me years ago that the real work in Alcoholics Anonymous and all these other 12-step fellowships is taking other people through the steps. That's the real work. And I grow spiritually more, I believe, when I'm involved in the witnessing of someone else's transformation. And those witnessings that I've been a part of, some of them have been as direct sponsor, and I've been blessed to have those experiences. But there are sometimes guys that I build relationships with who are sponsored by other men, but I become a 10-step buddy with them, and we become friends, and I'm still involved in that transformation process. And it does, it provides me with evidence that the power of God runs deep, that it can recreate lives, that the doctor, in the doctor's opinion, when Dr. Silkworth says that if our ideals are grounded in a power greater than ourselves, we can be restored to sanity. That can happen if you're 5 years sober, 3 years sober, 10 years sober, 15 years sober. That statement is always applicable. I can't say that word. That statement always applies. And if you jump forward to Bill's story, I believe it's page 13. No. Where are we? Page 14. He says, "My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead," he said, "and how appallingly true for the addict and the alcoholic. For if an addict and an alcoholic fail to perfect and enlarge their spiritual lives through work and self-sacrifice for others, they cannot survive. That's a promise. Certain trials and low spots ahead." So the big book right there states that we attempt to perfect in our spiritual lives through work and self-sacrifice. I've enjoyed myself this weekend. I always do when I, you know, participate at this level. But it was a sacrifice because I'm not with my family this weekend. I miss my family. I can't wait to get home to see them. But I also have a responsibility that, you know, God has given me a gift, and I need to be responsible for it. And my goal is to help and try to excite people about what's possible in this program. And I would imagine that this is possible for anyone. I mean, there's this story I heard a long time. I may have read it in a book, but, you know, if there's a piece of wood that's on fire and you lay some wood next to it that's not on fire, some of those embers will touch the wood that's not on fire, and then that wood lights up and it spreads. And one thing I've always been very careful about is who I spend my time with in this program. I like being around people that are excited, that are cheerleaders for the power of God in their lives. They struggle, they have difficulties, they make mistakes, but they continuously fall back on this simple program of action that we have. And the entire purpose of the program of action is to get you in touch with a power. Right, so there's sayings around the country that grace is sufficient. I don't know if that's true or not, but I do know there's a vast difference between having a personal relationship with the power that provides the grace versus just living in the grace of God. I want a relationship with the power that provides the grace. And that's what these 12 steps have afforded me, specifically 10, 11, and 12. And I fell in love with sponsorship when I was 4 months sober. I have sponsored many men over the years. I've been a part of watching someone transform, which has been incredible. It's just as addictive as any crack rock I ever hit. And they all, the guys that I sponsor, like for Brandon, for instance, you know, we're more peers now than sponsor and sponsee, but we still use those terms as labels. He's not remotely similar to the man that I started working with 10 years ago. It's night and, I mean, it's just crazy. If you'd asked me this man was going to have a farm with however many pigs and goats and all this other stuff when I first met him, there's like no way. This was Mr. GQ, smooth, Q45 Infinity, just corporate. But it was almost like through this process, he tapped in to this unsuspecting inner resource, and he, the true person that was inside, because I think that's what we struggle with a lot of the time. There's somebody inside that wants to get out, and we're terrified to show the world that part of us because we're programmed to do something else, to be someone else. He discovered his truth. I've discovered my truth, and I've gotten to watch other men and women discover their truth, and that is evidence of the regenerative power of God. God's power regenerates. I don't know if it's a she or a he or an it, and I don't really care. I just know that God is. It's simple for me. And I'm curious about the spiritual way of life, and so I continue to investigate that. The 12th step has given me an opportunity to have a front row seat to other people's transformations. And so I encourage you. You know, I said it last night. I used to believe that you only keep what you have by giving it away. Now I believe that you will never get it unless you attempt to give it away. And it's tough sometimes because the message in the big book is not super popular every single place you go. And you got to have, for me, it's about finding those pockets of enthusiasm and wanting to participate, a desire to participate, a responsibility. I've sponsored quite a few guys over the years. I took them through the steps. They got their life back together. They got their stuff back. They got their credit cards back. They got their relationship back. And then it was just inconvenient for them to sponsor. And as far as I was concerned, I didn't want anything to do with them anymore. I wasn't going to shun them. I'm just not going to ignore their phone calls. But when your actions show me that you don't give a shit, I ain't going to give a shit. But if your actions continuously tell me you give a shit about this way of life, I have to care. And I care. and I want to cultivate a relationship, and I want to spend time with you. But when you go through this process, and you did it primarily maybe from an unconscious state with a desire to just get my stuff back and get my life back and get my standing in society back, and you don't want to sacrifice that personal time, if you engage sponsorship, it will be inconvenient, I promise you. My first marriage failed because the woman I was married to was not in the program. She didn't understand why she wasn't the first phone call. She didn't understand why there was something more important than her. It was one of the reasons that our marriage fell apart. Nothing is going to be more important than my relationship with my higher power. And in order for me to have a relationship with my higher power, the way I've been created, it seems like I have to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and Drug Addicts Anonymous at a very high level. That's just what, those are the cards I was dealt, and I am absolutely okay with that. So we need you. Brandon talks about this a lot. We need you out here. Man, there are so many people that are not having the message that's in the Big Book carry to them. It's not, man, it terrifies me with some of the shit I hear sometimes with what's going on. I heard some shit this weekend, and I'm not going to talk about it right now, but it broke my heart to hear, you know, how somebody was being taken through this process. It's a simple process. You start at the blank page, you read the book together, you share experience, and you ask yourself, did that happen to you? These guys are talking about alcohol. If you didn't drink, did you use drugs like they drank? Did that happen to you? Did you ever think the way the authors of the Big Book thought? Did you ever feel the way the authors of the Big Book felt? Do you think what they're describing right now is possible for you too? That's how we take someone through the book. And then it's going to say, do this. And then do it. And then you come back and share experience about it. And then you continue reading from the blank page all the way to page 164. And if you want to be a purist, you can throw in Dr. Bob's Nightmare. And so I want to read a couple of things, and I'm going to tap out. So Bill wrote to Carl Jung in Zurich, Switzerland, and asked him how he had known enough about alcoholism to so counsel Roland as he had done. And Dr. Jung wrote back, and he told Bill, in essence, that he had always known that the alcoholics and the drug addicts' problem was a search for some type of unity. His search for unity, and he couldn't find it. He even quoted one of my favorite verses, as the heart panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. He'd always known that this was the alcoholic's problem and the addict's problem, his attempt to find unity with the life around him and with the God that made him. And when he found the bottle, or the spike, or the pipe, it seemed to be the missing ingredient. It seemed to let him live a little bit more comfortably with himself and in the society around him. He had found chemical unity, and it did a pretty good job for him until it became the problem that only a spiritual answer could solve. Now that's a beautiful thing. The most of us agree with it. Now here's what happened, and this just curls my hair. This is fantastic. It's a beautiful thing to me. Roland, having heard this, affiliated himself with the Oxford Movement and got sober. Then he ran into Ebby, and Ebby into the Oxford Movement, and Ebby got sober. And Ebby called on Bill, and Bill got sober. And so the finger of God, oh, this is so beautiful. In our entire history, the finger of God is so evident all the way through. From Carl Jung to Roland to Ebby to Bill to Dr. Bob and Bill to all of us. What a beautiful thing it is and how fortunate we are. I believe this to be the most fortunate segment of humanity, of God's creations. Because you see, we have to find an answer or we die. We come here not looking for God or to get our wives back or to get the love of our kids back. In many cases, like my own, we're not even looking for health, but just a way to live one day at a time without using drugs or drinking. So we might rub out a little off of the record. And we find that the formula for sobriety and the formula for the good life and the formula for a personal relationship with God are all one and the same. And we find an answer that makes the chemical unnecessary. And it's an answer that doesn't just stay in the meeting. When we leave, it goes with us. It must go with us. And we're never alone anymore. How fortunate can a human being be? Thank you so much for this weekend.
And those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music. That's a Nietzsche quote. Another one of his quotes that I like is, "One must still have chaos in oneself to be able to give birth to a dancing star." Those of you, and we know who you are because we've seen you and don't need to call you out, but those of you that have made it through the entire weekend, thank you. It's exhausting, and there's a lot of information and there's a lot of stuff, and hopefully at some point in time we've given you some new information that maybe makes you sound cooler in your meeting that you go back to. If you're anything like what we were in the beginning, it gives you the fodder to tell other people that they're doing it wrong. Maybe we got you excited about God. Maybe we got you excited about the possibility that your life could be different. Maybe there's more. I'll touch on the sponsorship very briefly before I move into the thing that I think I want to talk about. So every year at this monastery in, I guess it was late September, early October, I would start a new big book. And the purpose of this was I didn't want to memorize my notes that I had written in a previous book. I wanted to have a new experience with the big book every single year. And so I'm fine with memorizing the book, but I don't want to just know the information that I put in the book, because then I get trapped in the experience of my prior experience and I want a new experience. So until COVID hit, I had a new book every year. One year I had two new books because I gave one of my books away to somebody in treatment center and they wanted a book with all the answers, so I gave them mine. No. What the guy didn't know is that he could have bought the same book with all the answers, just didn't have my notes in it. But so because of COVID, this is the longest I've maintained a book, and it's struggling. I'm losing pieces of it, right? This is the most damage a book has taken since my very first one. My very first one has several pamphlets that you can take out. It's got a How It Works pamphlet. It has a probably somewhere around 83 through 88 pamphlet, because those were the pages I used over and over and over again. But so this one, I think it's the first time I've actually done it. When I talk about sponsorship, I don't talk about the guys that call me sponsor, okay? When I'm talking about sponsorship, I'm talking about guys I currently have in the steps. And I've arranged my life so that I can do that to the maximum without affecting the relationship with my wife and kids. And so I attend a Sunday night AA meeting, and I attend a Monday night CA meeting. My Sunday night AA meeting, I meet with a guy before the meeting, and I meet with a guy after the meeting. And then my Monday night CA meeting, I meet with a guy before the meeting. Now, over the years, you know, either ego or just this desire to help people, or somebody refers somebody that says that I think you're supposed to help that guy, which is also ego, because I want to impress the person that just sent them to me, that I have the ability to take on more people. So every once in a while, I'll pick up a guy at like 4 o'clock on Tuesday, or I'll sponsor somebody in South Africa at 1 o'clock on Monday, or so on and so forth. And so, but ultimately what always happens is I end up putting too much burden on my family and my relationships, and I'm not good to anybody. So the maximum number of guys I like to take through the steps is three. I have three time slots, and those are the ones I fill. I've got a guy that I meet with on Sunday morning that I'm burning off. He'll be done soon. And then I've got another guy that we're going through the steps a little bit different way, and we talk either Wednesday or Thursday evening. So he's almost done. He's a nine. He's making amends, and he doesn't have to make that amends to me anymore. And but so out of all the people that I have written, so I write their name and their sobriety date in my book when I get a new book, and anybody that I still have an active relationship from the prior book gets transferred to the new book. So I have in this book, so this is over 3 years, I have 40 names. Okay, so these are 40 people that either I had a prior relationship sponsoring with, or I took them through this book specifically. I think it starts, so what is that? 1, 2, 3. 40. All right, so 24 guys have been through this book with me. So that means that I transferred 16 names from the prior books, guys that probably called me their sponsor. I went through the list as Tarek was talking, and 16 out of these 40 will get transferred to my next book that I'm going to start this September or October. So out of 40, only 16 are making the cut to the new book. Now, I got a bunch of crossouts, which those guys are confirmed not sober anymore. And then I got a bunch of dots, and those dots are people that no longer engage me. Still sober, probably still doing a good job. I don't consider myself their sponsor. They may consider me their sponsor, but I don't. So when somebody asks me, how many guys are you sponsoring? Right now the answer is 5. Actively taking 5 guys through the work. One guy he's sitting on 6 right now. One guy's a 9. You got 2 guys that started the first step. And I think that this other guy that's in the first step is MIA, so I need a new guy to fill the Sunday night after the meeting spot. And I might leave that spot open for a little while because I need to refocus on spending some time around the farm and with my family. Okay? I can't sponsor the world. I try. But I shouldn't have to either. You see, guys will call me and they're like, well, I'm not sure if I'm ready to sponsor or not. And I ask them 2 questions. Do you have your experience drinking or using and your experience being sober and working the steps? Yes. Do you have a book? Yes. You're ready to sponsor. That's all you need. And here's the cool thing is you got this thing called a phone, and you can call me and you can ask me questions about the session that you're getting ready to have with a guy about what you should cover. And they do. I've got one guy that I've sponsored for a number of years. He still calls me while he's sitting down with a guy explaining the fourth column, and he's like, again, remind me the difference between selfishness and self-seeking, or self-centeredness, and so I explain it to him, and he, thank you, and then he's like, talk to you later, and he hangs up. I've been doing that for like 4 years. He still can't remember, so I help him through it, right? So you're not sponsoring alone. If you got a competent sponsor, you're sponsoring with other people. So I don't want to spend much more time on that. I think I've made myself clear. Probably gonna cry. I don't think I've ever shared this one. So, one of the hardest conversations I have ever had to have in my entire life was the conversation with my 7-year-old son and my 4-year-old daughter to tell them that their mother and I weren't staying together. I have two exceptional children, and they both have their traits that make most anybody that ever meets them like adore them immediately. Like they're just really cool kids. And I'm not saying that because they're my kids. I'm saying that because they're really cool. And so it had gotten to the point where the relationship was done for a couple weeks, but I was refusing to leave the house, and I was still trying to get her to maybe work on it. And it was clear it was done, and it was clear that there were going to start being bigger problems if I didn't get out of the house. So we sat down and we explained to the kids that we were splitting up. And this sweet little 7-year-old boy just starts saying, "No, no, 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 no. This is the worst summer ever." And, you know, it really wasn't the worst summer ever because we had had a beach trip and we had done some neat stuff. But so, like, I still remember that moment, right? Now, my 4-year-old daughter, she would go from crying to "Does this mean I get 2 Christmases?" My son is graduating from high school, and my drinking and abuse kept the family in turmoil for his entire life, whether he was aware of it consciously or not. I mean, it was just a struggle, right? 8 jobs in 6 years, mom and dad not getting along. Why is mom in the guest room again? Why, you know, just like all this stuff. And when that happens, you don't know, like, how are the kids going to turn out, right? Well, he's graduating with some absurd, like, 4.5 GPA. He was class president for 3 of the 4 years of high school. He's a manager at Chick-fil-A. He was the captain of the swim team. Like, his accolades go on and on and on. My daughter's got so many of them, too, but I've focused on her in prior workshops, but like I don't ever brag about the man that this guy has become. But what's apparent to me is that practicing the principles on all of my affairs has demonstrated to him how he's supposed to be, and how he's supposed to act, and how he's supposed to show up. And the conversations that we have about, this isn't how, I think you're disappointed in the way that you would show up if you continue to do this. Are you being responsible? Are you taking care of your sister? Are you being kind? And my daughter sends me neat notes about how she loves me and how she admires the things that I do. But like, here's what I know too, is that my son wouldn't be the guy that he is today if I didn't get sober. My son wouldn't be going on scholarship to Georgia this next year with a host of friends and people that respect him for counsel, and the fact that the place that, I mean, so many places that I go, when they find out that I'm this kid's dad, like, it kind of makes me kind of like a rock star, right? And here's what's even stranger about it, is that most people over the last 5 or 6 years, when they see his mother and I sitting next to each other at events, they think we're married. This woman that couldn't have a conversation with me without telling me what was wrong with me for the first 3 to 4 years of us being split up, we sit next to each other at events, and we ask about each other's day and what's going on in the life. I have a genuine care and concern for what's happening in her relationship. And she asked me about my stepkids and the things that are going on there. And we're planning graduation parties together. If I didn't get sober, none of this stuff happens. If I didn't set my course as to dive into the spiritual life and try to explore what spirituality is and trusting God looks like, and like really doing it, like really engaging whatever that is, none of this would be happening. Yeah, it's neat to be up, sit up here in front of you and talk about these things, but like, here's what I know. I know that if you were to follow Tarek and I out of here and experience us out in the world, we don't just sound good up here. We're good out there. We're good in our interactions with other people. I'll do some fun things just to do fun things from time to time, and I don't know why I feel like sharing this one, but there was a time period where I would stop at, in sobriety, where I'd stop at the gas station every morning, and I would buy a cup of coffee, and I would buy like 3 more cups of coffee. I would say, I want this one and 3 more larges. So the next 3 people, and because I would go to the same gas station, the manager, he knew what was going on, right? I'd be like, today I'm buying 4 of these. And he'd be like, all right. And one day, for whatever reason, I was fumbling to put my credit card back in my wallet. And so I happened to be there when another person, because I wanted to do it anonymously. I didn't want to get credit for it. And a guy comes up to get the coffee, and he's all huffing and puffing. You can just tell he's having a morning, right? And so he puts his coffee up there, and the manager goes, have a good day, sir. He's like, I just have the large coffee. And he's like, yes, and it's been taken care of. And he goes, yeah, I just need to pay for it. And he goes, sir, somebody has bought you a coffee. And he's like, what? And he's like, another customer has purchased a coffee for you. And the guy looks at him and goes, why would somebody do that? And he goes, I don't know. Maybe he's just a kind person. And then, like, so I'm standing there at the register, and I'm kind of cracking up and listening to this conversation. And then I watch the guy walk to his car. And, like, from the front door of the gas station to his car, he looks at his coffee, like, 5 times and just keeps shaking his head. Like, who would do that? Usually we don't get to see the result of our kindness in the world. And this was one of those opportunities where I got to see it. And it's fun. How often are you walking through the day trying to be kind, trying to be loving? It's far easier. And if you believe in we reap what we sow, or what goes around comes around, or this thing called karma, which is simply the results of past actions, then maybe it would be good to spread a little good from time to time and then see what happens. I really appreciate you guys listening to us. I really appreciate you being here with us, and I thank all the people that joined us online to listen to us and deal with this and all the stuff. I mean, this has been a really fun weekend. A good group. I hope that we've made some friends and touched some people and made some impact in some lives, because that's why we're doing it. Years ago, I felt like this was kind of a waste of time away from the family, and I wasn't sure that I wanted to keep doing it. And then the results sometimes take a couple years to come up. And guys that listened to Tarek and I back in 2015 started showing up in my life in 2017 and 18 and talking about how when we came and did the workshop, it changed their perspective and they had a transformative relationship with the steps. And they decided, we had one guy that he's in my home group now, and he's sponsored by one of the guys I sponsor. He was 9 days clean, shaken in the front row of a facility. And he was the one that had me be the discussion leader a couple weeks ago, where I talked about amends. And he's like, I remember you and Tarek sitting up there, and he's like, I had tried to get sober multiple times, and I had tried to do this thing, and he's like, I went to that facility with the commitment of, I'm going to do whatever it takes for me never to shoot dope again, because I want to be there for my son. And he goes, and 9 days in, you and Tarek are up there, and he goes, everybody else is complaining, and he's like, shut up, I want to hear what these guys have to say. Now he's a friend of mine. That too can happen in your life if you dedicate yourself to actually participating in the lives of others. So, thanks for listening and letting us share.